The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
You're listening to
Wrestling to the Max.
Alert, alert, clear all channels.
This is an exclusive
pay-per-view review.
How you like that?
Gary Vaughn, Sean Garmer, and Paul Leeser.
WrestleMania 33, Orlando, Florida. We are back home. I left here at 09, and to return on this night and to win these championships is beyond belief to me. Man, I'm so proud of myself. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of our families. I'm proud to be home.
Yes, you said indeed, my brother. We are home. And the journey was amazing. It was unbelievable. And for it to all culminate in winning the Raw Tag Team titles of the world. We came here and we procured the most prestigious tag team titles that they are. And to be here and do this beside you at the biggest WrestleMania in history, the biggest company in history, our home, World Wrestling Entertainment. I can't explain how wonderful it is. It's just absolutely delightful.
And I'm 39 years old and I can still jump off a 14-foot ladder.
How cool is that? And you jumping off that ladder, crashing through those 2 hours, was absolutely wonderful. But you know what the best thing of the whole evening was? We deleted the club's tag team title reign. Yes.
Give me the green light.
Oh, yeah.
Cause I'm ready to go. Let's have a good time.
Let's go.
What you waiting for? You only got one life.
One life.
And we gon' live it up. So give me the green light.
Give it to me.
Cause I'm ready to go.
Welcome, everybody, to Wrestling to the Max's WrestleMania 33 review. And boy, are we excited because we have a big card to talk about, plenty to get into tonight, what we liked, what we didn't, and of course, maybe some of the most special and important parts of what WrestleMania is all about. Let's go ahead and let you guys know, though, really quick, if you want to go find all our content, please go check out W2Mnet.com. That's right. It's where you go find all our audio and, of course, written stuff. And, of course, don't forget, Wrestling to the Max is where you go subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you find wrestling or, of course, any other podcast that you like to listen to. But, yeah, I'm your host, Gary Vaughn. Along with me is Mr. Paul Leeser.
Heyo.
And Mr. Sean Garmer.
What's up, everybody?
And boy, guys, we are here, and you know, I'm a little bit hyped. It's not because of what Mojo Riley did and what Rob Gronkowski means to the world, but it is because of the fact that I'm a little bit more cheerful compared to what I walked into this WrestleMania, because I think my hopes were kind of right about under 500, if we'll say it that way, in my thought process. And actually, I think this WrestleMania worked out, in my personal opinion, better than ever kind of was ever going to happen in my mind. So, guys, I mean, I don't know how you feel. I just want to get your knee-jerk reactions before we jump into all these different matches. Walking out of this WrestleMania, how do you feel about it, Paul? I mean, do you feel like it met expectations, underachieved, overachieved?
First of all, I want to say thank God we're not Patrick and have to walk out of the stadium of this WrestleMania because I would have been exhausted.
Oof, good God.
7 hours.
There are people right now who are watching the Wrestle Circus and Wrestling Revolver co-promoted show that was taking place after WrestleMania. Like, there are people still watching wrestling right now.
Wow.
Like, those are the real champions. I don't, you know.
It's what you call diehard, baby. Diehard.
I mean, they probably didn't go to actually WrestleMania and then go watch that, though. They probably just watched it on their TV and then decided to go to that show, I'd imagine. Because there's no way they got out of that. There's no way there might be people still trying to get out of the stadium right now.
True.
And if that's possible. Like, they said it was midnight-ish. I don't know how long they were going to wait to do the show. But I'll tell you what. I spent last year whenever we when WrestleMania was here in Dallas, I spent more time watching wrestling over the weekend than I did actually getting sleep. So there are people out there who are committed, and I'm sure there are people out there more committed than I am, but I like to think that there are people who are at Mania and like, fuck it, let's just go watch Wrestle Circus and Wrestling Revolver.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that you don't get to do on a normal basis. And if you're in the town already, why not? I mean, heck, the only reason I didn't do it when they were here in Dallas is because we were doing a podcast that night. And not only that, I just thought, man, you know, it's so late, blah, blah, blah. Maybe I'm old or something. But I just thought, you know, other things were going on that I wanted to do. So, but hey, man, cheers to everyone who goes and does that. It's a blast. And WrestleMania weekend's amazing if you're a wrestling fan. There's no better thing to do but be in that town and experience every piece of wrestling business you can get into. So,
absolutely. I guess to try to answer your question, Gary, I guess before we move on, I walked away happier than what I went in with. Granted, I was only really excited for half the card. And as we run it down, you know, I'll get into how I was at that point. But certainly at the beginning, like, they start coming out all these matches that I was excited for. I'm like, this bodes ill because the back half of this show is going to be a bunch of stuff I don't care about.
Yeah, I agreed. And, you know, and Sean, I mean, we talked about this on Thursday's show of Wrestling to the Max about how we were predicting these matches, but we weren't predicting so far a great WrestleMania. Do you feel like that this WrestleMania at least had a few moments? We don't have to talk about the moments, but do you think it overall had some moments that are worth maybe being historic in a way?
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, at least two or three come to mind, you know, immediately. But, I mean, that's nice to say, I think. If you're watching a WrestleMania and you have moments that you're left with, you know, last year I really can't remember that many.
You're right.
And we were there, you know, and usually when you're there, that changes your perspective. But that's still one of those things I have not gone back and tried to watch because, honestly, I don't think I could sit through another seven-hour event again. But it was a show that kind of, you know, it started nicely and then started dwindling as time went on. So,
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you. So that's why I'm excited about breaking down this card, because there's some times that we're going to be talking about that are going to mean something to people in 5, 10, 50 years. So let's go ahead and do this. Let's jump into this card. And just to let everybody know, once again, the New Day, of course, were the host. You saw them. Not too much, which I was very happy. We didn't have overexposure of the New Day. That thrilled me. That made me very happy. I was afraid that they were going to spend, 45 minutes with a New Day being goofy. Thank God they didn't. But what was kind of cool is they did have a new record over there in the Citrus Bowl for attendance. So that's cool for them and really awesome. But let's go ahead and jump into basically, I think, the most historic event of the night. And when it comes to historic, really, it's about the very end of this thing. But let's go ahead and jump into the start of it. Undertaker versus Roman Reigns. And this was your main event. And, you know, I wasn't really sure that this was going to be the main event. But we got at that. And what was kind of interesting was before the match even started, we had Jim Ross added to the commentary booth, which I thought was very classy. I don't know about you guys. I thought that was really cool that they gave Ross that opportunity to be beside Michael Cole and JBL and give his perspective, basically call the match. And, of course, sadly, his wife had just passed away just like a week ago. So it's cool to see that they gave Jim Ross some love and respect. I'm really, really proud of them for doing that. But, yeah, we get this match itself, and we have Undertaker and Roman Reigns battle it out. And really, honestly, I felt like Undertaker held his own pretty well. He looked a little bit better than he has in years past, and I think that he handled it overly comparable compared to what I really thought he would. I thought this guy was going to be dead in like 10 minutes. I thought he wouldn't be able to move. And the guy did a good job. Roman Reigns does come victorious, but not without getting lots of false finishes from Undertaker. And, you know, he finally hits the spear. that finishes him off. What was it, like a two or three off the ropes and spear? One, two, three. Finally, Undertaker is done. He's done with WrestleMania, we think. He's retiring. It looked like that, the way they presented his final dongs of the bell ringing. Oh, Sean, after I say all that, what did you think about all this? There's so much here, but it's so cool.
Well, definitely, I don't think those closing moments happen if he's not retiring. It totally seemed like the dead man is officially gone. He left the jacket, the hat, the gloves all in the ring there, and a wonderful symbolic gesture for a character that has lasted longer than probably any character of that type ever has lasted. Now, granted, I mean, what, the last 10 years or so of that has been him showing up at one event or two or three events of an entire calendar year. You know, I mean, yeah, he did some house shows and stuff there, but still, to have lasted that long at the level that he was able to achieve, especially in the latter half of his career where he was really having great matches, that's awesome. You know, but I think it also showed kind of a beaten down take. I mean, also in the story, right? The story is that he's beaten down, but he won't give up, and Roman has to officially put him down in order for him to go away, you know? But you could also tell the fatigue and age and everything else had caught up to him just physically. I don't think that was all him putting that as part of the match. I think that, you know, it's also just the dude's 52, and he was showing every bit of that 52, right? So I think it's a guy that knew it was his time, and thankfully he was able to make it through that match, you know, not get concussed or anything like with the Brock Lesnar one.
I love the post-match stuff, right? I might have done it a little differently, but the way he went out was fine. And if we get a promo from him tomorrow on Raw, I'm going to be very upset, because this is the perfect way for him to go. No words. He left it all in the ring. He left his, you know, the objects, really, of The Undertaker in the ring, and he just lowered down away from everybody, and that's it. That's how it should be. The match should have been half as long as it was, because the opening, I felt, was very strong. You have a lot of heated exchanges. Everything's looking good. And from, really, I think, the Tombstone botch on, you're sort of just hanging around watching The Undertaker fall apart. And while I think that's fine, it needed to be shortened up, because people want to remember The Undertaker as fondly as possible. And I don't think this match necessarily did that. The post-match stuff is what everybody's going to remember. I don't think anybody's going to remember or talk about this match very much, except for Roman Reigns and whoever else decides to bring it up on Raw. But
I'm pretty sure Roman might want to not mention this match either.
Well, you know, I mean, he's going to – you want the credit, I mean –
Oh, well, yeah, certainly, because it's going to build into the, you know, the story for next year, no right. doubt. But I think from a perspective of past the time that you need to mention it, I think he's not going to want to just I think in a way it also shows Roman's limitations, or at least in the picture that WWE likes to paint. Right, that he does his moves, and that's what he does. And when he's in there with someone that's not of the caliber to cover for that, and he's having to be that guy to cover for Undertaker, it was very, even more painful to watch, just because, like, you can literally see him just falling down and Roman's having to pick him up to do something. It's just, God, for a character that is so strong, that's what he is, this mythical character, and you're watching it disintegrate in front of you. It's just, it's just it brings tears, you know. It's not the way you wanted to see him leave, but you know, he does get to pass things on to the new generation, the guy that, you know, WWE wants you to believe in going forward. And look, whether you like the guy or you don't, in various facets, he has proven that he puts on good matches. When he's in there with great wrestlers, he puts on great matches, memorable outings. You know, he may not be there still with the promos, but look, he understands himself, and he has accepted what he is. The company sort of lets him down by deciding to have him defy what he should be, but that's what the company does. It's Vince's ego not letting himself, finally decide, okay, we just need to pull that trigger and then let him embrace the hate. But I feel like that's going to come eventually, whether it's another year down the road or whatever. I feel like eventually he can't. I don't think Roman has the potency of Cena to be able to pull that off for years and years and years and whatever, you know. But yeah.
Talking about. Well, first things first, I think Roman can pull off good matches with good wrestlers, too. It doesn't have to be somebody of the likes of Kevin Owens or AJ Styles for him to go out and have a good outing. But asking him, and his, admittedly, he is limited. He can do a lot of things well, but he's not the caliber of worker, obviously, I just mentioned. But asking him and a 52-year-old Undertaker to go out there for 30 minutes is just absolutely unreasonable expectations. Absolutely unreasonable for this to be anything worth talking about match-wise. For the longest time, and I know people are probably going to bitch at us every time we bring this up, but for over almost 10 years, almost 10 WrestleManias now, we've been waiting for The Undertaker to put over the young guy from 24, whenever we thought, you know, maybe Edge is going to be the one to pin him in that triple threat, and he was the one who tapped out to Taker, to, you know, all the outings with Shawn Michaels, all the outings with Triple H. He was never in the ring with that young guy, and then he finally gets there with Bray and some of these other opportunities to do it. Or at least it looks like younger talent might be coming up to challenge him and finally beat him. They never did that. And now you finally have that. You have a newer talent. Roman Reigns is probably going to be around at least 5, maybe 10, 15. He's somebody the company wants to hang their hat on, and this is the biggest win they could possibly give him. I have no problem with this victory. I really don't. Say whatever you want about Roman Reigns, but the dude, he's got the company behind him. I think he can work well. He'll get there eventually. I think he will.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong on that at all. I look at this as a situation that it all lined up in the best way possible for WWE because of the fact that Undertaker, I think himself, came to the conclusion and basically Mark himself, not really, you know, the character, but I think he understands. I am just too old for this now. I wanted to play this game for as long as I can, but I know I'm too old now. I finally figured it out. I'm going to put the guy over that is going to be here for a long time, and Roman Reigns is going to be here a long time. The only way he's not going to be is if he self-destructs, and honestly, I just don't honestly see that happening. And I think that really this is the guy that Vince is going to push no matter really what, so this is the guy to do it for. You're not going to give it to somebody else who could possibly be taking off to another company. Roman Reigns isn't doing that. We know he's sticking around. So I think this is the right storm for this all to happen. And it may be chaotic. People may not like it. People may love it. But all that matters is that The Undertaker went out in a way that was respectful. Because I said he was playing a comparable role in this because he may not have been looking great getting up, and trust me, I was making jokes this entire match. I'm not that the match itself wasn't awful, but I was joking with my wife the entire time. Well, because I'll say this before I go too far. I was joking with my wife about the fact that I said, oh, the Undertaker's coming out. I said, I could probably run to the store with you real quick because his entrance is on. I'll probably get back before he starts the match.
We were making jokes about that the whole time.
If they didn't have that platform underneath, you probably could have.
Yeah. That entrance would have taken 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, honestly, I could have went and got whatever I needed. So
gone to Sonic, grabbed a drink, come back.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been WrestleMania 34 by the time he got over there. Yeah. So.
See, you got two for one. But no, I'm serious. So I was making jokes about this, but the fact that he is older and you saw it was obvious in this match. You knew all the breaks he was taking. You could see it. You could see he has the heavy breathing and all that. But still, they gave him the opportunity to still have all those false finishes, to still look like the Undertaker that we remember. It took Roman Reigns a long time to beat him, but it also took Undertaker a long time to stand up. So, Paul, you're not wrong. The match could have been cut in half, and I think it would have been probably better, but I get it. I understand where they're coming from. I understand why they did it. That's why it doesn't bother me. Otherwise, it would. If I knew this was, you know, Undertaker wrestling two or three more WrestleManias, I would be pretty pissed off right now. I'd be like, dude, you're wasting all my time. Mm-hmm. So I get it. And if
you're the, even though you already had a, he was at that New Orleans, the other New Orleans WrestleMania, right? Yeah, that's the one where he lost to Brock.
30, yeah, it was Brock.
So, you know, technically he was at that press conference for the, the other, you know, the WrestleMania 34. So I think people might kind of be upset a little bit if you didn't go to the one at WrestleMania 30 and 34 was going to be your first WrestleMania and you wanted to see him. But that's why I think he should never appear at these press conferences, because you never know when that last time is going to be. But you know, it's like you said, Gary, they gave him opportunities, but still, there was no reason this match needed to go 30 minutes. I felt like it was almost like they did it on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, oh, let's just go to midnight because we can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there's something to both those points, because there is obviously, I think, the WWE hubris at play a lot throughout this show. And why not? You know, it's WrestleMania, it's their biggest show of the year and all that. But I think there's a part of it, too, where Vince and everybody back there wanted to be as respectful to Mark and just sort of let him, or The Undertaker, and just, hey, man, we're going to give you this much time. Go out there and tell the story you want to tell in whatever way you want to do it. And that's what him and Roman did, I think. And I had to sort of expound on Gary's point about how, you know, how tired he looked. I think the way they shot it too, like the production crew, every opportunity they could take, they only showed you the Undertaker from maybe the chest up more often than not. And I thought you could tell they were trying to hide, I think, how quick he either got tired or how, you know, there were the times when he was climbing up on the tables on the outside, his knees were shaking badly whenever he was, you know, stepping or trying to step up. And, you know, like, I mean, it goes back to what Sean was saying earlier, too, where you're literally watching a man fall apart in front of your eyes, trying to get that one last gasp in. And at times, I think they were very successful, and other times, I don't think they were so much at all. And I think he did it the way he wanted to, though. And that's what's going to let him sleep easier. And I think this was going to let Vince, a lot of WWE staff, sleep easier.
Yeah, true. You know, the Sinatra song, he made it his way. He got it his way, whatever. I don't know what it is. But he did it his way,
right?
I did
it my way. Yeah. Oh,
what was that? What's his name? Sings it all the time from WWE. The old man.
Patterson sings.
Patterson. That's his song. Yeah. They should have had him sing on the way out. You know.
My God.
No, I'm glad the way they did it. You know, just to just kind of finish this up, I do want to say, really quickly, I am still shocked that Undertaker took that over the top rope landing on his feet bump. That was amazing the way he did that, the way he just landed on his feet, because honestly, I never thought he could do that with his knees and his back and just the body that he has now. It's beaten down. It amazed me that he did that spot, which, you know, congratulations to him for really putting that on and probably keeping it together, because I'm sure that wasn't easy for him.
So
spear through the table too is we're talking about. Not only did I think Undertaker wouldn't get enough, but Roman landed on the crown of his head. I thought he was going to be down for quite a while, if not dead.
Yeah. Yeah, Roman almost DDT'd himself on the.
Oh man, yeah, it was nuts. So, but you know, it's an awesome finish, at least for the Undertaker. The way they let him, like you guys said, take everything off, walk out, and just, you know, let him end the show without any words. Very, very happy with that and very thrilled. Really quickly, I know we're taking it forever for this, but I want to know your guys' thoughts really quickly on the Jim Ross thing. Do you have anything to say about that? Because I kind of felt like it was cool. Did they do that just for The Undertaker, or do you think, honestly, they may have done it because they wanted to celebrate Jim because of Jan passing away?
Both.
Yeah, I'm with Sean on that. Both. Taker probably asked, and you know, Jim's obviously hurting, and maybe letting him be around people he's familiar with, and at least might view as family.
I think if it wasn't, I think Cole wouldn't have mentioned it on the broadcast. But the fact that he did, I think, tells you that it has to do with his wife. But I'm sure the majority of it probably had to do with Taker wanting him to be the guy to, if that's my last match, can I please have him as the lead commentator, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I totally agree with you on that. We're going to, you know, kind of move around this card. We're not going to just do everything in order because I think we want to save some of the bigger matches maybe for the end here. But we'll kind of sprinkle all the good ones in between. Let's really quickly talk about another match that I thought was kind of interesting. And it was one that really honestly started out WrestleMania. And that was Shane McMahon versus AJ Styles. And I think all of us were kind of really questioning how this one would turn out because, you know, we've seen Shane McMahon. He does a pretty darn good job. But let's be honest, AJ Styles is one of the best wrestlers in the world right now. How is that mixture going to work? And how, you know, well would they be able to put on a great showing? AJ Styles does win this match, but I have to say for myself, I think Shane McMahon put on a pretty good show. I love the spots that they put together for this. You know, of course, Shane jumping to the table. There's just so much. I won't use everything. I want you guys to kind of talk about your favorite spots in this. So, Sean, kind of tell me how you felt about AJ Styles in this match against Shane.
You know, I really enjoyed this match. It was actually way better than I thought it had any right to be. I was surprised it was the opener of the main card. I was also shocked that they basically, for the most part, kept it in-ring, and it was about the wrestling, and it wasn't about, well, let's just kind of do this for a little bit, and then we're going to find a way to have Shane, which they eventually did do that, but they didn't do, like, this ridiculous stunt with Shane, you know? Mm-hmm. So some of the stuff they did, like the 450 into the triangle choke was perfect, you know, as you can get with Shane not being a wrestler. I mean, yeah, you know, Shane's punches are terrible, but I mean, some of the wrestling Shane did was fine. I mean, like, you know, Shane shouldn't really be able to even, you know, hold a finger to AJ at all, but for the story they're trying to tell and everything, and they made the right decision, right? AJ won, no doubt about it. I think you got everything that you needed, and you got more than I think anybody was expecting, and that was great about it.
I think that unbelievable performance that Shane turned in might have inflated my opinion on this match by a whole ton. Because I wasn't expecting a lot. You know, I was expecting usual Shane. You'll have AJ holding it all together. It'll be a fun little match, and what they give you is a fun match on a whole nother level. Because they come out and they chain wrestle for 5 minutes. Shane McMahon chain wrestles with AJ Styles pretty passively, I would say. I was incredibly shocked. And then they get the brawling part in.
And whenever those AJ arm drags in there. And like,
arms,
man.
Like the standing switches. Like, he's doing all these things that they look easy. They aren't easy.
No.
And especially to do them, I think, as crisp and clean as he did, being who he is and the level of training he's had and all these other things. Like, Shane absolutely blew me away.
this might be the best match he's ever had. And I know he's had some great matches that are usually sprinkled in with these great moments, and I don't want to take away anything from his King of the Ring performance with Kurt, because that was incredible. But this was almost on a whole nother level for me. And AJ was, you know, he lived up to his name once again. Phenomenal. Shane just over-impressed me to the point that I thought, and I might go forward thinking this for a while, this is one of the best openers in WrestleMania history, I think. Just an incredible match. And yeah, Shane probably shouldn't have been booked to be able to compete with AJ. But for God's sake, what they gave you was just unbelievable. I loved this match.
I want to say I agree with both of you guys. I really thought that this was so much more better than I ever wanted to give it credit for. When I first even heard about this possibility of these two guys in the ring, I was already crapping all over it. I didn't want to see it. I thought they were just catering to Shane McMahon. I couldn't find out it wasn't about Shane at all. He was the second choice. Actually, it's because HBK turned down this gig, right? So, I mean, Shane popped in and said, hey, I'm up for it. It's really cool on his part. And for the fact that Shane McMahon has a history, and you can go back and watch that history, and he's faced some of the biggest monsters in WWE history, that brings a lot of credibility to him that I think that maybe they didn't touch on enough for me personally. I kind of wish they would have to get more people maybe behind this. But they definitely showed it in his ring work, and the fact that this guy obviously takes this serious. He was not unprofessional at all. He looked like he was ready from day or from step one in this match. So you got to give both these guys credit. They did a good job. I think AJ Styles still came out of this looking good, even though, you know, you guys both pointed out once again, Shane should have never really been able to hang in there, but because of what they did here, I'm okay with it, and it works. And AJ Styles comes out of this smelling pretty darn good compared to what I thought they would. I was really worried about this match. So very, very happy man right now. I want to talk about another match that was pretty close to the start of the show, and that was the Intercontinental Championship match between Dean Ambrose and Baron Corbin. And honestly, I don't think any of us were super excited about this match. Not saying anything about the competitors themselves, but it just honestly was not the most sexy match that I think was on this card. But at the end of the day, we do have Dean Ambrose retaining his championship match after a match that really was very similar to the matches we've seen with these guys. I don't think he had anything super spectacular, over the top. It was kind of there, for me personally at least. Paul, I mean, how did you feel about this match and Dean Ambrose winning?
You know, I thought that this was a match that I thought deserved to be on the pre-show. The build wasn't very great. They didn't have a whole lot surrounding the match, or a lot of excitement, really. And the crowd showed, right? They weren't super exuberant. They didn't start getting, you know, to the point of making any noise until the very end of the match, really. And that's not, I think this was a fun brawl for the most part. You have a lot of slow parts, but the parts that were on for me. I question Dean winning here. I thought giving the belt to Baron and sort of opening up the mid card to actually be a mid card would be a nice change of pace, but clearly they like Dean in the slot he's in now. So this is either going forward some more, or they just wanted to sort of, I guess, pay Dean back for getting murdered by Brock last year. Yeah, I haven't decided which one yet.
I think also you have to look at it from a perspective of somebody had to retain on this show, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking after Dean won. I was thinking, okay, this makes sense because you've got two title changes you know are happening, and it's your two major titles. And then most likely Alexa Bliss is not walking out with the SmackDown Women's title either. You know, it was highly unlikely that Gallus and Anderson were going to walk out with the Raw tag titles, which they didn't. So you already had a lot of title changes planned for the show. You do got to remember that they don't always treat WrestleMania as the end. They treat it as the beginning of the next year. You've got a pay-per-view coming up for SmackDown. Maybe that's where you pull the trigger for Baron, you know, and you want Baron to have the big moment, I guess, or have the cool, but it's on the pre-show. Like, who cares? The same thing with like Austin Aries. I was thinking about it as like, at this point, I think it'd be a bigger deal if he won on 205 Live. Like, so, you know, I really didn't care that much that I was wrong about Aries not winning because, for one, that's kind of like the only story you have in that other feud. But it's almost the same thing with Ambrose and Corbin. Like, they'd actually kind of done a decent job of building something with them. Just it was kind of lacking towards the end because it kept being about the same thing over and over. So maybe another month they can figure out something else. Corbin can just be really pissed and, I don't know, beat him up some more. I don't know what they would do with this. But Corbin was obviously trying to use this to try to show that, hey, I deserve my main event spot or I deserve to have a bigger spot. Well, you can't even beat Ambrose. So what does that say about you right now? So now he has to go and try to prove himself again. And we'll see what happens. But like you, I was a bit surprised Ambrose won. But then when you think about it, and the rest of the things that happened on the show, and the spot it was in, I'm kind of glad. Because, you know, you never know with the way WWE is, they could have him do a rematch on SmackDown and Baron wins, right? We saw this last year.
It's very much the truth, because of the fact that when we were doing our predictions, I kept thinking to myself and fighting myself on the choices of these matches, because it's not normal for them to do just that, right? I mean, just go ahead and just say, oh, man, look at that WrestleMania moment. The guy retained in the next night or on SmackDown two nights away. Done. What they were planning on doing on WrestleMania changed because they didn't like the internet knowing. So they changed it, and they said, we'll just put it off another night. And so that's kind of the way I kind of honestly felt maybe this could be. This could be the situation. Because I really clearly thought this was Corbin's time. And if it's not, I can understand that to an extent because he's still young. He's still trying to get into the groove of, you know, honing his craft, really being better. And he's gotten better. He really has. I have to give him credit. The guy has actually stepped his game up. But I think, you know, it wouldn't hurt to put a little bit more polish on him before you do give him a belt and continue on. But we'll never know. We'll find out on SmackDown, I'm sure, this week if that's going to happen sooner or later. So let's jump into some other matches here. I think we need to talk about something that I think we're all, I think, a little giddy about talking about. Sean just mentioned it just a minute ago. The Raw Tag Team titles. And this is a title match that, honestly, if you heard our prediction.
Well, I was going to say, do you want to just get done with the pre-show first so we don't have to go back to it?
Sure, I'm okay. I was a little afraid of doing it too early because I didn't want us to screw our rhythm up. But I'll do it right now. Let's go ahead and start off with talking about that other match then, Sean. Let's talk about Austin Aries versus Neville for the Cruiserweight Championship. And this actually started off the entire WrestleMania, if you want to be technical. If you were in the stadium, this is the first match you saw. And honestly, I'm going to go to Paul on this because, Paul, you were really not thrilled about this. You were kind of angry about the fact that they put this match on the pre-show. Austin Aries does not win. I really felt like Austin Aries was going to have an opportunity to take the belt home, but Neville does retain. And it, honestly, I think a hard-fought match. I think both these guys did a pretty darn good job, but Neville's still champion.
I think these guys really worked very hard to try to put on a great match, and they only really got to very good. Mostly because, and this is the part that I think disappointed me, was that I figured they would at least be in front of a crowd who cared. And ultimately, they cared at some parts and were sort of absent throughout some other parts. And I'm not asking you to be hot 24-7, right? It's not how wrestling fans work, and it's not how any fans work. You can't be loud 24-7. But there were parts here that I thought were really cool that they were quiet on. And Aries, I mean, he almost got dumped on his head twice. Like, the dude almost died, I think. I liked the match they worked. I thought it was good. They just didn't get to the level I thought they needed to be. I'm still waiting for them to have that match that makes everybody in the arena go, man, this is why I need to watch 205 Live. And I don't think we've gotten that yet.
I think you've gotten some of them. Not them personally, but I think you've gotten some at times. Like, I thought the Rich Swann and Neville match on Raw was one of those that would certainly want to make you watch it. Neville's had some other ones. The fatal, one of the that first fatal whatever five way or whatever I think was another one, but certainly Aries himself hasn't had that match that goes, man, he's really getting a lot of attention from the crowd. Why should I really care about him? And I mean, he has that personality that gets you to watch him, right? He has the charisma. He, that kind of douchey, but I'm full of myself, but I can back it up personality gets people in the door, but the wrestling hasn't gotten quite there yet, like you're saying. And I they certainly wanted to put on the great match. I think certainly everything Paul said here is straight on. The crowd wasn't into it enough for it to really feel like that big moment. I think also because you might have still had people settling in, going, getting the stadium, getting what they want, all that kind of stuff, you know. I think parts of it were just not there to get that. And again, maybe you need that big match on 205 Live or that big match on Raw, and it clicks better for them there. Sometimes on the big pay-per-view, it doesn't always work out.
Right. That's the thing. Is I was really hoping that this match was going to be on the actual card of WrestleMania, and not be a pre-show match because of what Paul just mentioned, and we talked about this on the preview. I wanted this to be a showcase for the Cruiserweights. I wanted it to be something that really did spur that conversation amongst wrestling fans, especially the casuals, of we should watch this 205 live show. I remember going to WrestleMania last year, and me and Sean sat there and listened to people talk about, who is this guy? I don't know. And they'd be like, oh, he's from NXT. I don't even watch NXT. Well, I was hoping that guy maybe proved a point that they need to watch it. And tonight, I was really hoping that 205 Live would get more views because of what Austin Aries and Neville did. Did it really work that way? I agree with you guys. And not per se. Did it maybe make some interest? Possibly. But being so early in this card, being the first thing that people saw, and honestly, probably not the first thing a lot of people saw, that's a problem for me. I was really disappointed. I think they both put the work in. It sucks that the position they got put in. And trust me, I would not be putting my body on the line to the fullest extent, especially if I knew that I've only got about maybe 55 to 75% of the crowd here anyway. So let's jump over to the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. And I'm not going to go through everything here because there's so much, my God. But there's what was 33 interesting,
people in there.
Yeah. You can imagine. We spent 2 hours talking about who got eliminated when. Let's just talk about the last three and what happened and transpired in this. We had Jinder Mahal, we had Mojo Rawley, and we had Killian Dane from NXT. And actually part of Sanity, which is kind of cool. And the fact that these three guys were the last in the match was something not really predicted. I think Mojo Rawley got a nod from some people because he's kind of right now this generation's king of the multi-man battle royals. He's just won so many of them so far in his early career. And we were really curious about Jinder Mahal. What the heck is that guy still doing in the ring?
Because Sami Zayn got limited, right? Before, yeah. In the fourth,
yeah, he was actually the fourth. Yeah, you're right. So that was so crazy. You think Sami Zayn would be in there for Jinder Mahal? Of course, we found out later that Jinder Mahal was basically used to try to punk out Rob Gronkowski, cheering on his buddy Mojo Rawley, which spurred on
because he's foreign.
I know, right? How racist. Anyway, Vince. Rob Gronkowski of the New England Patriots gets in the ring and basically tackles, spears, whatever you say, Jinder Mahal. And that spurs on the end of this match, though, because we do have Killian Dane knocked out before Jinder Mahal, which is ridiculous. And then Jinder Mahal, of course, is taken out by Mojo Rawley himself. So this really just is a what would you say? A kind of a Hollywood, a popular superstar, a guy that's in the NFL. Everyone knows they love getting to be a part of this. It's kind of like, the year they had The Rock and the UFC fighter girl. The one that,
Ronda Rousey.
Ronda Rousey. Thank you. I've already forgotten her name because she's lost too many times. basically, this is that moment for them. I know, I feel bad for saying that, but it's just the truth. But Rob Gronkowski, really cool for them to be a part of this. But what do you think about Mojo Rawley winning this, Andre the Giant Battle Royal?
This isn't the first time we've seen Gronk be associated with Mojo, so yeah, it is kind of cool that it keeps escalating.
Yeah. But what do you think about Mojo, though, Sean? Because this is kind of his thing now, to win these matches.
I do want to say that it's really funny that the lady just comes over to Gronk and, like, kind of holds him there. And you're sitting there going, man, Gronk could just really just push her away. Like, I mean, so it was probably good that they had, like, five other people come and try to make it seem like they're trying to really stop him or whatever. And then he just kind of nonchalantly gets in the ring. You're kind of like, all right. I mean, this is just a weird way to go about this, honestly, but I think as soon as we saw Gronk there and Mojo got to the last three, he was winning. You know, I'm fine with it. Kudos to them for, you know, Zack Ryder gets hurt and they run with it as far as trying to do something with somebody new. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, Killian Dane being part of a group that is still establishing itself on NXT, it was always going to be, I'm surprised totally that he got to the, you know, top three. But he wasn't going to win. Jinder winning would have just been like, oh, thanks, you're reminding us that this is Jobber Mania at the Battle Royal. Braun being eliminated so quickly was totally shocking to me. That was the one where I was kind of like, whoa, a lot of people picked him to win, and he doesn't even get close. But good for him. He's above this at this point. But, you know, hopefully it works out for Mojo, and he gets something akin to what Baron Corbin got, where it means something and not, oh, it means something for, like, the first couple of weeks, and then they forget about it.
I'll tell you what, this is a fun Battle Royal overall. It's not one of the best ones. It's certainly not the worst ones I've ever seen either, though, but it was good. I think them eliminating Big Show and Braun early was a smart move, because I was just expecting to sort of sit back in my chair and glaze over while this happened in front of my eyes and watch, you know, Braun murder people. He didn't really get a chance to do that, although it did take the entire ring to eliminate him, so he looks super strong coming out of all this. I like Mojo winning this, kind of. Like Sean said, you know, your tag partner gets hurt and people kind of are ready to sail the boat on you, and then they throw you into this and you get this win and all this other things. And it might just be because he has a relationship with Gronkowski, who looks freaking ginormous. You know, I mean, you always hear how big he is, but this close on a camera in the ring with other big dudes, like, he just dwarfed Jinder. And Jinder's not small, obviously, and he ran him right the hell over.
He certainly hindered his progress to move.
Yeah, that's true. Man, what do you guys think about the fact that we did have some other names that aren't, you know, really well known amongst the casual WWE fans, like, you know, Killian Dane and the Chinese superstar Ting? I can't remember his name. Is that you may have mind.
Bing,
thank you. What do you think?
I like the I like the run Killian Dane got in there. Him lasting so long, hopefully he got people interested in Sanity. wow. Bing, he got his moments here or there, but I don't think he got to see it enough. I'm dying over here.
Wow, you okay?
Yeah. And I thought Dolph got a lot of run, too, which was good. Got, like, three or four eliminations, a lot of cat, you know, hanging out by the skin of his teeth stuff. So, like I said, it's your average Battle Royal, but
I love the line of, who was it? I think it was JBL that said, I think Dolph's been outside the ring hanging on for dear life more than he's been inside the ring.
Yeah, that is true. Because he was a lot, but I love also they kind of talked about the strategy of, like, doing what Road Dogg did, right, and hanging onto the bottom rope or something like that. I remember that. So,
well, literally, you can just lay outside; it doesn't really matter. So.
Mm-hmm. it's the truth. And they we talked about the Royal Rumble. Jericho did that a lot. You know, they make a big deal about his time, but he did spend a lot of time outside.
Roman did that, and then he got the Roman sleeping chant.
Yeah,
when he was on.
Roman sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah. The my favorite part also was the big report that came out of, oh, they removed all these people. Oh, all those people were in the damn battle royal. So it's like every single one of them were there. In fact, Kalista was the first guy to get eliminated. It's like, okay, big deal.
Oh man, yeah, exactly. Oh boy. Well, you know what? You know, the battle royal, like I said, it was entertaining. Not the best, but it was there. And Mojo, man, I hope you do something good out of this. We'll see. Let's talk about what I originally was going to get into. I'm glad we kind of got the pre-show stuff out of the way. I just was afraid of messing up our rhythm here. But let's talk about the Raw Tag Team Championships. And this what's interesting is what I was alluding to earlier was the fact that really this was not the most exciting, because we cover Raw every week. And this is usually one of the downfalls of Raw, is how they're handling their tag division. And when they made this a ladder match, which is very late in the game, it was the go-home show when they introduced the ladder. I think it made it better, one, first of all. And the second thing is the fact that we do have a united Sheamus and Cesaro, which makes that better. And I think the other tag teams in this match was, of course, you know, Gallows and Anderson, along with Enzo and Cass, who were really the favorites in this, really had a better chance at having a good match. But what made this even more special for this WrestleMania was the fact that we had the New Day come out and say that there's actually going to be a fourth team added. So it's going to be kind of a fatal four-way tag team match, you know, ladder match. And you really were curious who it was going to be, because, you know, you had really the New Day looking like they were ready to go, like they were going to announce themselves as being a part of this. But it wasn't, and the whole crowd said delete. And to the crowd's surprise, it was true. The Hardy Boys attended WrestleMania. They were actually a part of the show, and they got to wrestle for those tag team championship belts. And boy, I mean, there's so much here. I'm not going to take any away from what you guys are going to say. I just want to say for myself, it was very exciting to see the Hardys. I really didn't think it was going to happen. I thought Raw. I really did. I felt like Raw was the time when we were going to get the Hardy Boys. Nope, we get them at WrestleMania. This is a super awesome moment. The Hardys actually win this match out of all the great in-betweens. I think this match was pretty fun and entertaining. For I thought I was going to be ready to be bored. So we've got the Hardy Boys winning the Raw Tag Team Championship belts. This is exciting. It's fun. There's so much involved here, Paul. Well, I was just thrilled. Go ahead,
Patrick. And the fact that the Hardys kind of let the original guys in the match do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't the Hardys taking the spotlight and the other guys didn't do anything.
And it should be mentioned, of course, that just the night before, they were in a ladder match with the Young Bucks. So, I mean,
which is a tremendous match.
Yeah, it's supposedly amazing. I still haven't seen it yet, but, man, I love this, too. I was expecting a New Day to jump in the ring, honestly, and out come the Hardys. And the crowd marks out, and you get a loud wonderful from Matt Hardy at the top of the ramp, and they charge on in, and away we go, and this is really fun. You have a lot of big spots. I think it all gelled really well together. And you know, you get to watch a lot of big guys do big guy things and some really agile things, too. And Enzo's sort of just the guy getting thrown around in between, almost. So, this was such a fun match. I really loved it. I thought it was one of the best of the night. And obviously, congratulations to the Hardy Boys, who continue to prove they are the best tag team in all of time and space.
Yeah, you had to hear it unless for some reason you skipped like the first 2 minutes, but that's the closest we've gotten so far of them. You heard them being broken a little bit here and there in that promo. It was Matt. Jeff completely did not acknowledge that at all. There was Brother Nero chants in from the audience, which obviously you can't control that, so... And Michael Cole did mention that they are here and they are broken. So from what I've heard, Mr. You know, because WWE has this very powerful lawyer, Mr. Jerry McDivitt, McDivitt looked at the thing from TNA and he laughed hysterically at what TNA is trying to claim for their broken gimmick. And then it's perhaps why WWE is letting them do it, because they don't think that TNA is going to have a leg to stand on, not to mention they start... It doesn't matter how much money Anthem has. Anthem tries to start messing with WWE from a legal standpoint. They're going to get eaten alive. So, you know, they're probably feeling like, well, Anthem can try to pull all this they want to, but they're eventually going to lose. And the people that are going to lose out money-wise are Anthem. So, you know, they're probably thinking Anthem will eventually just drop it.
Yeah, you're probably right on that.
Revy was obviously ecstatic as well on Twitter about this whole thing. So.
Especially as she gets to rub it in Impact's face. And just like, ha, 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 look at these guys. You guys didn't want to pay him. You didn't want to do all this other stuff. Well, guess what? My boys are on WrestleMania.
And I want to point out, you know, that report about Jeff being so happy in Ring of Honor that came out, that they weren't going and whatever. I don't know, you know, if you listen closely to that little one-minute clip that we played in the intro, Jeff Hardy, I think, said, "I'm glad to be home," like about five different times. So, you know, totally contradictory to the thing there. But, look, these guys look really excited to be there. The fans, the internet, everybody went absolutely insane. And I think some of my favorite stuff was Cesaro and Sheamus just being so, such a team. I love seeing that. Like, I love that swing and the beating the chest thing to Gallus and Anderson. That was so great. And their entrance was so great. I love that. I love that from them. Just, you know, Enzo and Cass were great too. You know, Gallus and Anderson, they played, I think, lesser parts, but still, you know, you had the fun spots where everybody got a chance to get up the ladder and they were almost going to win or whatever, and then Matt was able to hold on and grab those belts, and that's kind of a cool thing to, like, walk in, lose belts the night before, you come in and you win belts the night you arrive. You couldn't ask for a better storybook in, you know, beginning for your new run in the company.
I really hope they open Raw with them tomorrow. I think that would be such a cool way to open the show.
Yeah. It'd be amazing if they ever get to sing the song or whatever, but probably not going to happen, but you know.
Yeah. I know. And one thing, it's kind of weird to say this, but I kind of wish that they would get new music. I wish they'd get the piano stuff. If they're going to go on and do the broken thing, and maybe it's not full on.
Well, Revy owns the song, right? That's what she's claiming, that they made that song.
Yeah, and it just depends. But, you know, WWE, they're probably going to be very leery.
Well, what WWE can do is what they did with CM Punk and some other guys. Well, like the Hardys, obviously, because they can't trademark their names because that's their names. But they can trademark you while you're with them. So they could trademark that song while they're there and then, you know, release it to Revy later. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. My friends had told me that they had already settled and essentially that they dropped the suit or whatever, which I hadn't read anything about that. So I don't know how valid that is. But, I mean, either way, if WWE thinks they're going to get away with it, And they get a thumbs up from the legal team, that go for it. Why not?
Yeah, I agree. That, you know what? There's a reason why these guys were the hottest thing last year, right? It was because of this gimmick. And why not take advantage of that? And I think maybe Vince McMahon and maybe even some of the other guys, you know, WWE understand that. Like, man, our merchandise sales are going to go out the roof if we continue this. If we change them too much, it might not.
Right. So, I do wonder if they're a little bit leery about, just very much like when this isn't like when a character comes in from NXT. This is expecting, once you get past this week, now you're back to the regular WWE audience, and you have Matt Hardy come out and he's talking in an English accent, and Jeff Hardy's acting like he's not Jeff Hardy. People are gonna think it's weird and they might boo and, you know, stuff like that. So they might think of it as, let's introduce them to this stuff slowly and see how people react. And if you get the random crowd in, I hate using this, but, you know, Green Bay or middle of the country chanting delete and obsolete and Brother Nero and whatever, then great, right? But if once you get past this week and the smarky crowd goes away, you know, you might run into trouble. And I think it might be smart to kind of drop the hints here and there. And maybe you have to do that transformation on Raw, on a pay-per-view, and have it happen in WWE itself, and then you can run with it. You can't have him walk in day one, I'm broken Matt Hardy cutting, with the, you know, Vanguard One showing up with them doing promos backstage or in the wilderness somewhere, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you obviously can't dive in head first, but I still think you can have them sort of act like they did in the Impact Zone or whatever. Like, there are pieces of this gimmick I think you can get away with right out the gate if you have them explain this. Because they've been gone seven, 8 years. Like, stuff happens in that time. And just right. Video packages, WWE's so good with those. You can put something together before you go on TV tomorrow, and I think you can have yourself at least, maybe not, you're not obviously not going to have everything without, you know, Senior Benjamin, and I don't think they'll do Vanguard One or Rebby, obviously, but there are pieces of this I think you can shove onto TV tomorrow night, and you'll be successful with, not only with the live crowd, who are just going to eat up what these guys do no matter what, but I think people at home can connect pretty easily with a video package promo combo here.
I will say, if Vanguard One shows up, you know the crowd's going to go nuts.
Oh, my God. He might get the loudest pop of the night. And Finn might show up tomorrow, for God's sake. So.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I would love it. You know, and the sky's the limit if they want to allow it to be. I really am looking forward to this. And tomorrow night we'll have more on this Hardy's
can
situation.
Can you imagine with WWE's production what they could do with some with those vignettes?
Good God. Like, oof.
Wonderful is the word you're looking for.
Yeah.
I'm looking
maybe even delightful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at a marvelous experience. but here
we go.
Well
done, Gary.
I just had to throw that in there. WB Studios, you got a new movie right there, right? We're just waiting for you. You know, the Hardy Boys. Anyway. But yeah, I mean, this is really cool. I'm excited about tomorrow, and we'll find out. Make sure you tune into our Raw review. You'll find out all the info and what we think about what happens with the Hardys going forward. Let's move on to another match that I think was, you know, one we were kind of looking forward to see and to see how it all kind of shook out. And that was, of course, the United States Championship match that Chris Jericho walked into and hoping to retain against Kevin Owens. And these former best friends went to battle. And I think you got a pretty decent match here. I don't think it was overly great. I don't think maybe it was meant to be that way. But I think they put a pretty darn good show on. I think these guys really worked hard. And in the end, what you get is Kevin Owens basically doing what he did in NXT, right? And using the ring apron itself as a weapon, and putting Chris Jericho out of commission to get the 1-2-3 here. What do you think about this, Sean? I mean, were you kind of interested in the fact that they kind of used that finish that they used in NXT quite a bit for Kevin Owens?
Yeah. I like the way they did this. It was extremely well done. It's, you know, it was a really good match. I mean, they played off the putting in each other's, you know, the finishers. And I like that. I like that he used everything he could, and then he went back to an old trick that worked. So, you know, why not? Something we haven't seen in a while. And that's what you should have. You should always have something up your sleeve that will get you that win when you need it. And Kevin Owens was desperate to get that win over Chris Jericho, and he did what he had to do.
I really enjoyed this match as well. I thought it had some pacing issues at time, but when these guys were working the right moments together, it was really, really good. And I think what works so well about this is not only Kevin, you know, obviously constantly mocking Jericho and doing what he usually does in the match, just turned up to everything, but he came out so hyped and, you know, like, ready to prove himself and all these other things. Like, it's all these small pieces in this match outside of the, you know, the structure and the moves and everything that I think really brought this together. Like, you know, I don't know how many people are ever going to remember this long term, but I will always remember the time Kevin Owens got a rope break by just putting his index finger on the bottom rope. Oh. Like, that was awesome.
Yes.
Such a dick move. That was so great.
Yeah. And the apron powerbomb, like, obviously the pop-up didn't work. All of Jericho's moves that he was busting out weren't working. His big top rope moves weren't working. And for him to go to, you know, down the well and essentially pull out his murder, death, kill move of the apron powerbomb, I thought that was a great final touch. And, you know, hats off to Jericho. This might be one of the better matches that we can get out of Jericho in this day and age.
You're right, and you know, it's really just it's super special for the fact that, you know, Chris Jericho is a long-term superstar, a guy that's been around forever, and for him to have these kind of matches still at his age and doing what he's doing, it's really, really cool. I'm really happy for him, and I know he was thrilled about doing this match. I still want to know, though, you know how they have magicians and they have their tricks? Well, so do wrestlers. They have their tricks on how they protect themselves and all that stuff. I still have to know how you protect yourself from that. How do you the power bomb under the apron? I mean, that looks like it murders you. And mm-hmm. for a guy that had back issues, probably still kind of has some, even though he's doing DDP yoga and Chris Jericho. My God, wow! So props to him. Props to, you know, Kevin Owens. They both did a pretty darn good job in this. And
sure, really Kevin picked up a few new back issues jumping onto Chris Jericho's knees so hard with that back senton he did. That was awful. Oh,
super awesome though. The swanton. Oh my God, I loved it. That was so cool. And that's, you know what? It's funny, guys. When I saw that swanton bomb, I thought to myself, if Jeff Hardy's backstage, this is perfect. And guess what? Jeff Hardy was right there. So I just thought there was a little tease. I really did. It's funny that I thought that it was a little tease. So, but, you know, moving on from here, though, let's talk about the Raw Women's Championship. And let's get into the fact that this was a elimination match, and it was a fatal four-way elimination match, to be exact. And we had Nia Jax, we had Sasha Banks, Charlotte facing off against the champion, Bayley. And I got to give him credit, really cool entrance for Bayley. I thought it was really well done. Of course, fireworks were done for a few people, but I think for her specifically, it worked really well. And of course, you know, the waving two men thing was awesome too for her. So really cool. And Sasha Banks, once again, super classy, super cool the way they do hers. It's awesome. So really thrilled about that. But, you know, getting into this match, I really, to my, you know, surprise, was more into it than I expected. I did not expect to be really that into it. But I think they did a good job of making Nia Jax look strong here, because she pretty much took on all three, right? She mm-hmm. took in three women and shoved them out of the way. It took all of them and all their effort and their teamwork to put her out of commission and to make her the first pinfall and eliminate her out of this match. And that was really neat to see. To see all three of them have to work as hard as they can to get rid of Nia Jax. That does wonders for Nia Jax. Really happy for that. And then you move on from here, and of course, you get the three, and Charlotte kind of takes a backseat for a second here, and you think you're going to get Bayley and Sasha Banks, and it's going to be a battle. It was very short-lived, and then you get basically Charlotte and Sasha, and then Sasha is eliminated by Charlotte. Now we're left down to Charlotte and Bayley, and I think they did a pretty good job ending this match. I think that they, you know, may have left a few things out that they could have put in, but for the most part, I think it was pretty solid. Bayley does win, and you still have her as champion, and I thought that was super cool for her, especially since she needed to prove herself in front of a giant crowd, as in WrestleMania. Overall, Sean, I like this. I was really okay with it. I kind of enjoyed myself.
I kind of felt like Sasha and Nia were almost extras here that they were sort of almost unnecessary to this match, really, other than just Bayley kind of, and it wasn't even really Bayley. It was Charlotte taking care of them, right? And then Bayley beat Charlotte to get the win. Now, Charlotte was almost a one-woman show in this match.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and Charlotte was fantastic. The corkscrew moonsault was great. Then the moonsault she misses was beautiful. Of course, she always hits those really well. But, I mean, she did almost everything here. Bayley kind of came in and picked up the scraps, and then just winning with that elbow was weird. And this also felt rushed. This felt like they told them, "Oh crap, you know, you got a certain amount of time." Charlotte did all the stuff to get rid of Sasha and Nia, and then they had to kind of rush the finish, and it was like, "Oh, okay." You know, but Bayley retains, and let's see what they do on. I think Monday is going to be very important as to where they go here.
Yeah, Charlotte for sure is the MVP, and you say, you know, you can do so many things right. You know, she hit, like, her moves were crisp. Everything she did in this match was great, except for that damn middle turnbuckle thing. It didn't come off, and that's what made those last two eliminations look so weird, because they were predicated on that middle turnbuckle not being there. Sasha hitting it with the buckle still there makes it look way less impactful, and then her just sort of getting pinned after that, I think, threw the match off completely, because I think everything up to that point was really, really good. Nia got to look really strong, and it took everybody to get rid of her, of course, which I thought was really smart. And then, you know, Charlotte pretty much would have destroyed Sasha if that buckle hadn't been there. And then I think the back of Charlotte's head or something like that was supposed to hit that middle turnbuckle on the fall there before Bayley puts her away with the elbow, and it just looks really odd with all that not being there. So, I mean, it certainly takes away a little bit from here, but Bayley gets her big moment. I think she looks like a star at least now, which I'm okay with. She beat Charlotte clean, all that good stuff. And I found it odd at the time that Sasha wasn't the last one she beat, but I don't think they're willing to go, you know, to start pulling the trigger on that feud yet. I think that's what tomorrow will be.
Oh, plus she got the shield bomb, which was cool.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I almost forgot about that one. That was super cool. And yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Paul. I think maybe we'll get more of the Sasha Banks heel, you know, turn or whatever you want to call it, her turning her back on her friend Bayley, maybe even tomorrow, because I think it's kind of imperative for them to get that going. I really think so, especially if you're not going to have Charlotte as your, you know, peak champion. I think you've got to do something else and get Charlotte moving in a different direction, which, you know, maybe Dana Brooke, maybe something else. I don't know what she'd be doing, but I think it's super cool to have that feud pretty soon. And Sasha Banks and Bayley, I think, will do a good job in it, because I think Sasha Banks, as we've seen in the former times, is a great heel. So, but yeah, I mean, there you go. And, you know, hopefully good things come out of this on tomorrow's show, Raw. Let's get into another match that was kind of, you know, heartfelt and very touching. And this may be one of the better feuds when it comes to video packages, and that is the Miz and Maryse taking on John Cena and Nikki Bella. And this is a match that I think everyone kind of knew how it was going to go. This was no surprise. It went okay for the most part, but we knew that John Cena and Nikki Bella were going to win. They get their normal Nickelodeon ways of finishing the match with the AAs and all that, blah, blah, blah. But the biggest part of this is the fact that, you know, John Cena pulls the trigger and, you know, asks Nikki Bella to marry him. So, I mean, I cried for like 15 to 20 minutes after that. I mean, it was so hard to, you know, not really. I cried because they actually put this on WrestleMania, actually. And I was actually thinking, what's the biggest work? The matches or that? And I think that won. So, anyway, let's get into this. What do you think, Paul? I mean, you love the video packages Miz and Maryse did. Didn't really feel like this did any of them any favors, but we knew that going into this.
You know, Miz got a lot, I think. It's been in that first half before, you know, the baby faces go wild and run everybody over. I thought The Miz, I mean, The Office wasn't anything to write home about, but he had Cena on the ropes for a good 5-6 minutes. So if they ever decide to pull the trigger on him again or do something, I mean, he doesn't look like garbage coming out of this. And the thing I think that irked me the most about this was the video package and everything else really made the women just seem secondary, and so did the match. They got in very, Maryse got in little, and Nikki was pretty much only there for the finish. And of course, to be proposed to by John Cena. So, you know, I mean, I want to give all credit to Orlando for not booing them out of the stadium while they were doing that too. I was really expecting them to turn on that, but it was very respectful and everything. So that's cool too. But, you know, I mean, whether it's real or not, obviously congratulations.
That kind of felt real because John Cena got the nervous boy voice.
When yeah, he was he doing had the shaky that. Hand too.
Yeah, like, you know, why? That.
He's John Cena.
But Gary, like, you know, it's still one of those moments. Like, even though you know she's going to say yes, you still get a little nervous. You still get those butterflies. You know, I know I got them. I mean, it's going to happen. Like, And you're in front of everybody. Like, you're in front of freaking 70,000 people. I mean, it's not you're not in a restaurant with 30 people. You're not in a park with just you and, you know, people that are walking by. That's 70,000 people, you know? He seemed even more happier than she did, honestly. That's how I kind of felt, like, maybe he had really thought about it, and even though we kind of knew this was kind of leading up to this, I think, and I think she probably had a feeling, but he kind of was nervous about it. And hell, that you don't just buy that kind of ring for nothing, right?
Like, yeah,
that wasn't a cheap ring.
Or it's the biggest cubic zirconium you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah,
one of the two.
I saw Rob Gronkowski's face. He was jealous. He kind of threw his Super Bowl ring on the floor and said, oh, I want that one.
Why does she get all the good rings?
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, man. You know what? I mean, I do say this is fine. I'm really not upset or anything about them getting engaged, I guess. It's just so silly. It's corny. But that's, hey,
and, I mean, Total Divas is coming back on Wednesday, so,
yeah, you know. It's just the fact of, you know, I'm thinking to myself, why should he be nervous? He's John Cena. I mean, he could probably walk up to anybody and ask him to marry him, and they'd just say yes. I mean, heck, I would consider it. I mean, so, I mean, he's got millions of dollars. I would never have to do anything the rest of my life.
You got to follow those rules, Gary.
Yeah. And that's
true. And there may
plus,
be
you know, he's kind of got to swing that way, so.
There, well, not only that, there'd be some dark time moments I wouldn't like.
Yeah.
Anyway, getting past that. Congratulations to him. That's really cool. You know, the match itself was fine. I mean, it told the story that it needed to tell. I'm curious how SmackDown, if I really want to know what, you know, The Miz and Maryse are going to do after this. If they're just going to put this behind them and move on, which they should, I want to see what they do next. So, yeah. But let's talk about a non-sanctioned match, and that is, of course, with Seth Rollins and Triple H. And what was interesting about this match is a couple things, and I want to mention this because of their entrance. You had this police escort for Triple H and Stephanie riding their own motorcycle behind all these other motorcycle cops, which was interesting for myself because I kept thinking funeral procession. But they did go down. I really did. I thought, this is like a funeral procession. I've seen this too many times. And then
I thought Undertaker was just in the back being livid that his gimmick got infringed on.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, that's it. I quit.
I'm out.
Yeah,
Roman, you're on your own, buddy.
Yeah.
This is why I really retired. Screw Triple H.
Yeah. He always screws us over. Anyway, but what's funny is, and I told my wife this too. I said, look at this. So you got two healthy people riding a motorcycle all the way down that long ramp. I said, that's a long ramp. That's not short. I said, and then you got the guy with the bad leg walking all the way down.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense.
Yeah. So,
but anyway, is it smart for Triple H's end, right? Why conserve your energy?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think I don't think we can stop here without saying that. Good Lord, Stephanie looked amazing.
Oh boy, yeah, it hurt a little bit. I'm sorry.
Oof.
Oh man, is that? I think the goal every year is that. I think that's what we've kind of seen with her, is that that's kind of the goal that she has.
I mean, like, she didn't really look that hot last year with the throne thing. She looked kind of wild. Like, there was something about her riding on that motorcycle, and then when she got off it and whatever, it was like, whoa. Yeah. All right.
She's straight up stunning tonight. Like,
yeah.
It hurt. It's real bad.
It's like, you know, hey, if you had the John Cena salute going on, you may have had it later in this match, too. So.
It's true.
Yeah, so, anyway. let's get into the match itself. We had, I think, the match that we were expecting, really. You know, what is Triple H going to do? He's a cerebral assassin. He's going to try to work on Seth Rollins' knee. Seth Rollins is going to try to do as much attacking, you know, to Triple H as he can, try to work on, you know, maybe a few body parts to get himself an advantage, too. I think, you know, with the classic sledgehammer being, you know, at least, you know, shown on this show and a few other things added in, I think these two did a pretty good job. I was not, you know, sitting here thinking this was my favorite match or anything, but I think they did a good job. And with Seth Rollins winning, it means a lot for Seth Rollins. And it also shows that, you know, hey, Triple H will put over somebody. So, you know, may not be Sting, one of the best wrestlers of all time, but he'll do it for Seth Rollins. So there you go, Seth Rollins. You got something over Sting.
God, Gary.
WCW should win something. Good God.
Well, you know, we've gotten past that point already.
Not me, Sean. I'm holding on to it.
But still, you know, Seth Rollins was scaring me at times with the way that they were really going to the knee, like the way he was selling it at times, just like, whoa, be careful, you know, don't injure yourself again. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's credit on him and credit on Triple H for that. I think this is sort of very similar to the Bobby Roode and Shinsuke Nakamura match from the NXT TakeOver, where it's either you like this match or you don't like this match at all. I ended up liking it. I think they told a really good story of Seth Rollins having to overcome and having to do everything, and then he had to take out the queen to get to the king, you know, with the big table spot. Look, I don't think it was thrilling all the time, certainly, but it got better as it went along, I think. And you know, this is also kind of Triple H's thing, right? His matches are not what you would say quick. They're very applauding and methodical.
It's not like last year where they really could have cut out a whole lot of the match that they had with Roman, right? This one, I think, had a bit more substance to it, not only because of the feud, but because of what they were doing. Obviously, you know, being unsanctioned, you could do a lot more than what you could do in a straight-up one-on-one title match. But I think there are still some parts of this you could have cut down on to at least give it a little bit of a better flow for certain. But I'm like you, Sean. I enjoyed this match. Eventually, you know, it's above average. Like, you know, Seth worked well. The knee work that Triple H did was sold very well, but it didn't really play too much in the finish. I mean, he could still do the Phoenix Splash and Pedigree, for God's sake, so, you know, it's whatever, but I you know, I didn't hate this. I'm interested to see what you do with Seth going forward now. A title picture is busy.
There are people that really thought this brought the show down, so
yeah, it's interesting. I've read a few reviews already that were not fans either.
Oh, wow. You know, it's kind of weird to say, but I was okay with it. I didn't love it, but I also didn't really hate it. I don't think it brought the show down for me. I think that they at least held their own.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess I lay in that gray area somewhere. I want to talk about another match that I think was kind of predictable in a way, but at the same time, not for me. I was totally against this being predictable.
And that was the SmackDown Women's Championship match. Now, this is a six-pack challenge. We had Alexa Bliss. We had Naomi. We also had Natalya, Carmella. You throw in Mickie James. And missing one more. Who else? Oh, Becky Lynch. These are all the people that were involved. And in the end, I mean, I think you got an okay match here. But you do have Naomi, the hometown girl, winning. And congratulations to her. That's awesome. You know, that's something super cool. That'll be a memory she'll always have. And I think they did a pretty decent job with the match. I think the entrances were cool. They had a few entrances that were pretty neat, you know, for this at least. So I don't know, guys.
They
I mean, I've cut some of them short
because of the time. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, speaking of that, what do you guys think? The entire time, all the talk was, oh my God, they went from putting them on the pre-show to they're going to cut them. And I'm sitting there going, they're just going to put them in the death spot like they've had several women's matches in the past. Like, I just thought that was funny. Like, the entire time, this freak out over, oh my God, they cut the SmackDown Women's match. But, I mean, what it, I mean, Naomi got her full entrance, and it certainly, you know, being in the dark really helped. It was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Naomi wins, and for the time they got, I thought this was good. I mean, I saw people complaining about that, oh, none of the moves made sense, and all this stuff. I was like, well, I mean, it's a multi-person match, and they were trying to have them kind of stay involved with each other, which I appreciated. I mean, I don't know what you want here.
Yeah, there's lots of energy. I felt like everybody was pretty much in the fight the whole time until you got down to the very end, like maybe the last 30 seconds. And I, you know, Naomi getting the big win in the hometown crowd. Like, I think for 6 minutes, this did an admirable job. For what they were trying to accomplish, and Naomi gets the big moment. Like, it doesn't get more WrestleMania than this.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And you know, that, like I said, that's a special moment for her, and you know, it's really cool that she actually was able to you know, get, you know, the champion Alexa Bliss to submit. So that's even better than just beating Mickie James or beating Natalya or someone else. It means something more, beating the champ himself. So. But anyway, let's move on to some other really interesting matches. Let's talk about the WWE Raw Championship match. Oh, excuse me, what am I thinking here? The Universal Championship match. I don't know why I'm calling it the Raw Championship match. I think that's exactly what I think when I think of Universal. You know that, honestly? They don't like to say it that way.
It is red, you know.
It is red.
I think that's why. It's red everything, right? Stop working.
She won't work there anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Only in the movies. Only on your movie screen. Let's talk about Brock Lesnar versus Bill Goldberg. And this is one that, honestly, I thought was going to main event. I'm kind of glad in a way. Maybe it didn't. But there's been a lot of controversy what people thought that this could be, what it would be. But we got a match here that didn't last 15 seconds. Shock, maybe, to some people. But it lasted, you know, at least a few minutes here. Bill Goldberg, of course, got his spears in, and especially the big one to the barricade against Brock Lesnar. But Brock Lesnar did come back, and I think Lesnar got at least 10 suplexes in, so that's solid and very good. But, you know, he finishes off Bill Goldberg with the F5, 1-2-3, and you've got a new Universal Champion in Brock Lesnar. So not what I wanted. To be honest with you, I wanted to bloody Bill Goldberg to end this. Not as thrilling as I wanted it. I guess it's good. I'm glad at least Brock won. Not what I wanted, though, Sean. I expected more.
I love this. I love the fact that it went right around the 5-minute mark. What, you want this to go 10, 20 minutes? It wasn't going to do that.
No. I wanted more blood or violence or something. I wanted
that wasn't going to happen. Goldberg was already gassed by the time he did like about 3 suplexes to him. I think what we got out of it, that's what you were going to get. The fact that we got that, honestly, this match served the purpose of let's wake the crowd up because they're dead, and it did that. That spear goes through the barricade. The crowd goes nuts. I love the fact that they really this. I thought it was just gonna be Brock dominating Goldberg, and that was it. But they had him go back and forth, and then Brock eventually wins. They had the false finishes. He kicked out of the jackhammer, which, you know, that was the move they had put him down. So that tells your story there. I mean, I thought this was terrific for the time that it got. I loved it. It was entertaining, and I mean, it was really what we could have hoped for out of these two. Wait, best match that they've ever had.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not saying much,
but
yeah. I enjoyed this, I think, for what it was always going to be, and I was actually surprised this actually got as close to 5 minutes as it did. I tell you what, I really bit on the fact that Goldberg might retain after he no-sold those first three Germans, and just absolutely, the camera hadn't even panned back out by the time he had ran Brock Lesnar over with that first spear, I'll tell you what, and this, all credit to them, I think they did the best that they could do in this day and age. I didn't have a lot invested in this, so it was fun, it was entertaining. I don't think I enjoyed it as much as maybe people there live or Sean or whoever else is speaking very highly of this. But it was good. I'm willing to give all credit where it's due.
I'll say it this way, and I agree with what Sean's saying here, is you've got to expect what's expected, right? And that's Brock's doing the suplex city like all night long. Goldberg's just going to spear you. That's all he's really going to do. He can't do much more. Didn't even get a jackhammer in this, I don't think.
He almost got the win with the jackhammer.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Everybody in that arena bit hard.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. It always went together because of the suplexes and all. I was very disappointed because I wanted to see maybe some stuff outside besides just one spear at the barricade. Some way, somehow, I wanted Brock Lesnar to make this mean a lot. And I feel like he won. That's all he took away from it. I wanted Brock Lesnar to be so pissed off that he was out to kill Goldberg. Not just to beat him. Not just to be happy with a win. I wanted Brock Lesnar to prove a point to Bill Goldberg. Just because you beat me multiple times, this means that you're never going to beat me again. Or something like that. Just to make him suffer. And it's not because I hate Bill Goldberg. It's just because I wanted it to have that story. It didn't have it. Oh, well, I'll get over it. But outside of that, you can't expect a 5-star match out of these two guys. You're never going to get that out of these two guys. Let's just be honest. That's just not in the cards. So let's talk about the last match on this card. And that, of course, has to be the WWE Championship match. And that takes place between Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton. And this one had some interesting moments in it, especially with the moments where we got all the disgusting video parts of this, where, you know, the maggots and the bugs and all that. It was there. It was kind of, I want to say this, they had a decent match. It was nothing that really blew me out of the water. I think the bugs thing and all that kind of was a little weird. It doesn't work for this. For me personally, doesn't work for this. And not only that, I think that was borderline hokey WCW in a way, I want to say. Because it seems like I remember that 98.
It was doing borderline terrible.
Well, I agree with you. But that's WCW at times. So, at the end of the day, RKO out of nowhere. Randy Orton's your new champion. I don't know, guys. I was really wanting a better match. I thought it was okay, but
it was horrible. I'm sorry, this was bad, and then the stupid stuff with the, you know why it's so bad? Because anybody with a brain can tell that that's a freaking hologram or a projection. Like, mm-hmm. I cannot suspend my disbelief when you are not doing anything to hide it. Or make me think that what I'm watching is real or whatever. It's just, look, I get it's all mental and you're supposed to think that it's getting in his head or whatever, but it didn't work for me, and it was so plodding and slow and, you know, just,
I don't know if I would call this slow. I would call it very structureless. Like, it felt like they were just sort of out there doing stuff, right? And at times, some of it was kind of cool, what they were doing in there, and other times it wasn't. I didn't mind the bug things. I got what they were going for. They're trying to tell you the story that Bray is doing everything within his power to try to get within Randy's head, and it didn't work, and all that other stuff. I felt like there's a better way to do that, and I felt like there was a better way to have this match, and they just kind of went the other way with it. Mm-hmm. I don't think I hated this, but I wouldn't call it good either. It's very okay.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Like, it's definitely not trash, but I think, well, not for me at least, but I think that there's so much more that they should have done and could have done, and this was just so hokey for me personally. So I think what you take out of this is really what's funny about this WrestleMania is there's so many other good parts of it, but your two championship matches when it comes to your major titles is so lackluster in a way. I hate to say it that way, but I kind of walked away with that feeling. It's odd to say that, but that's just the way I felt. So,
well, SmackDown's two major titles that were lackluster. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you had the women's title was kind of, it was decent. So you know, SmackDown didn't have the AJ and Shane was the standout from SmackDown.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of indicative of what we had this week in the Go Home shows too. I really felt like Raw outdid SmackDown this week in the Go Home show. So it's kind of funny that kind of bled over into WrestleMania itself. But, you know, we'll see how things shake out at WrestleMania. I think, you know, there's always going to be things you don't like and always things you love. And you know, WrestleMania is no different. Well, let's go ahead and, you know, get into this thing. We need to rate this thing because we've covered all the matches. We've talked about pretty much everything under the sun when it comes to WrestleMania. But I've got to know what you guys really feel like this whole entire show deserves. So, Paul, kick us off here. What's your rating for this show?
The front half of this show is awesome. The opener, U.S. title, the tag team titles for Raw. You have a lot. I'm forgetting other stuff already, but essentially from the opener, I think to the tag match, you have a really, really good show. Aside from the mixed tag, you know, which was going to be what it was always going to be, and then I think everything else in the back half is just either really disappointing or very meh or downright heart-wrenching in not the right ways, in some ways, and just fine in others. So a tale of two halves. I think the front half was strong enough for me to give this a 6, but certainly could have been a better show, I think, when you look at the back end. But the front half, wow.
I think I'll go 6.5. I like the Goldberg and Brock match a bit more than people. I enjoyed the Rollins and Triple H. Your main event wasn't good, but it told a good story. And then you did have the heart-wrenching moment with Taker. And, it's like, you know, Paul said, the front half was really good, and it kind of carries it through. Plus you add in the Cruiserweight title match there, and you know, you had the cool moment with Cena and also the Hardys showing up. I mean, so that makes it stick out more for me, so I'll say 6.5.
You know, I don't think you guys are far off from me as well. I started this show off watching and thinking to myself, man, I really undersold this. Like, what the heck was I talking about? Like, I look stupid now, you know, previewing this because I was really kind of ho-humming some of this stuff that I'm really liking now. And then, of course, later, like, you know, you guys are pointing out some things I really didn't care for as much. But, you know, we got it done. I think what bothers me most is things that should be the most significant were not. And the things that we undersold really sold well. And that's what's so funny. It was kind of inverted here. And
I kind of felt like, you know, a six or seven where I have to land, and I think I'm going with a six too. I think it's just because of the fact that it was not a super solid card when it comes to, you know, big five-star matches, four-star matches. They told a lot of stories here. They put a lot of things in progress and maybe even stopped a few storylines. But at the end of the day, it was an entertaining show. They gave us enough to be happy. And I think at the end of the day, you walk away excited about Raw because you got the Hardys joining back and being a big part of this. And you want to watch SmackDown just to see if John Cena, you know, treats Nikki any better. So, I think that's what I got from it. So we shall see.
Well, I mean, I kind of want to know what AJ is going to say now. And
yeah.
Yeah.
True. I mean,
new champ too, Randy Orton, 13th time world champion.
Yeah. Man, it's just amazing. So lots of great stuff that we've got looking forward to this week. I think this week's shows are going to be a lot of fun when it comes to, you know, our reviews for Monday Night Raw and, of course, SmackDown Live on Tuesday. So be looking for those shows, everyone. Make sure you go, if you haven't already done it, subscribe to Wrestling to the Max. That gets you all those shows. Of course, go check out W2Mnet.com. You can find those shows there as well as all the written stuff that we have available for you guys. I mean, there's just so much content that we're going to be providing this week that you don't want to miss a minute. Also, if you haven't heard our NXT TakeOver Orlando review, you need to go do that as well. Trust me, check it out. It's a really cool show, and you're not going to want to miss a minute of us talking about all the big things that happened. So besides that, guys, we are done. We hope you've enjoyed this WrestleMania 33 review for us. Until next time, if you're not living life to the max.
Not living life at all.
You know it.
Please. Yeah.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.